On Sunday, April 29th at 11 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl presents a conversation with luthier Linda Manzer. Join us as we discuss the craft of making guitars and some of Linda's clients, including Pat Metheny and Julian Lodge. That's Sunday, April 29th at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl's the name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones. And our guest for this evening is luthier or guitar maker, Linda Manzer. And tonight we'll be playing the music from a few of Linda Manzer's clients, Pat Metheny, Milton Nascimento, Bruce Coburn. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to squeeze in Julian Lodge, but anyway, we're going to start off the program to end our celebration of National Poetry Month with Amiri Baraka from his New Music, New Poetry release, Strunza Med. Stay tuned. Sugar in My Bowl, starting now.
What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I want some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar in my bowl.
When I was in Newark, I went to a school, a high school that had a lot of Italian students in it, and a lot of words they used to say when they got angry, I would listen to, and I never found out the definitions. This is a poem about one of those words. It's called Strunza Med.
If the world was a poem, it is a poem. If the world was a poem, it is a poem. If the world was a poem, a poem. If the world was a poem, it is a poem. What kind? What kind? What kind? What kind of poem? What kind of poem would it, is it, if it was? It is a poem. There wouldn't be no academic poem, no dull poem, no dead rhyme, no dead unrhyme. It'd be alive, a living poem, a breathing poem, a hell of a, one hell of a, like an interesting, a very, very interesting, and say a beautiful, very, very beautiful and ugly, very ugly and tragic, and very tragic and sad, very sad, but anyway, happy, very happy. If the world was like a poem, what kind of poem, what kind of poem would it be, the world, what kind of goddamn poem would it be? Well, look at it, fool, look at it.
Thank you. Your name, Sugar?
Oh, that's not my name, but that is the name of the show. It's called Sugar in My Bowl. My name is Joyce.
Oh, come on. Okay. Sorry. No, I was going to make some bad joke about sugar, honey, but okay. I was going to break into song. I was all set.
And that was the Archie song, right? Sugar?
Yes.
Honey,
yes.
Honey?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No. I'll spare you.
I have an official start. Here goes. Hi, my name's Joyce Jones. I'm on the line with
Linda Manzer.
Linda Manzer, thank you so much for joining Sugar in My Bowl. And that was the official start.
Hello.
I really appreciate the time you're going to spend with us. For me, probably a simple question. What is the difference between, and I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly because I never use this term, luthier and a guitar maker?
Ah, it's really just however you want to name me, because a luthier is derived from the word lute, so it's a stringed instrument maker. So a guitar maker, I guess, is just a smaller subset of that category. But if I'm trying to confuse people, I tell them I'm a luthier, and they try to figure out what church that is, and then it goes faster if I just tell them I'm a guitar maker. So
thank you for that. I suspect luthiers also make violins, cellos.
Yeah, anything with strings on it. I actually learned the name when I went to customs in Britain, and the nice elderly man looked at me and he said, oh, luthier, that's derived from the word lute. And that was news to me, so I learned something from him.
How many years had you been doing it before you ran into that gentleman?
Oh, gosh, probably 10 or 15 at that point.
Okay.
I just hadn't thought about it, really, you know?
I need to clarify something for myself. I was talking to Nels Klein. He was the last person that I interviewed, and that's how I actually learned your name.
And then there's the world of acoustic guitars, and in the case of, you mentioned Pat Metheny, he has that guitar that Linda Manzer made with all the necks coming off of it that looks like Picasso created it.
Right.
And that thing sounds amazing.
It does.
I've never purchased a guitar that's probably even close to how much any Linda Manzer guitar costs. Mm-hmm. So I basically kind of have heaps of not very expensive guitars, except for a couple. And the rest of it's just my disease. It's just that I have them because they call to me and I can write them off on my income tax.
Okay.
And I love them.
We were talking about Pat Metheny's 42-string guitar.
Oh, yes.
Are you the person that also, when Metheny's touring, have handed him the guitar and then removed it from the stage?
No, that's actually his guitar tech. It's funny, we get confused a bit. But Carolyn Krizan, she's actually been Pat's guitar tech as long as I've known Pat. And she and I actually are really good friends.
Oh, good.
But she's not me and I'm not her. So, but I think people do confuse us occasionally because we're both female.
Actually, no, that's not. You look similar. You look like you could be sisters. So.
Yeah, like, well, we sort of are in a weird way. I've seen her all over the world in different, and when I'm with the backstage or something, I'm trying to help if I can, but really, it's not really my place to be fiddling around with the guitars, because they've got a whole system in place, and I actually probably get in the way more than anything. But yeah, she and I are really good friends. Her name is Carolyn Krizan. I may be pronouncing it wrong, and I have no idea how to spell it, but it's got a C-Z-R. We say Z, by the way.
Uh-huh, for Z.
Instead of Z.
Right.
So if I want to torture people in America, when I'm spelling my last name out, I say M-A-N-Z-E-R, and that just completely confuses Americans, because in Canada we say Zed.
Well, you know that's not fair. We in America have PBS, and we watch a lot of British television.
Cool people watch PBS.
That's right.
This I know.
animais.
Só tenho o chão, eu me entrego com amor, temo tua paz.
Teus tesouros, mas ninguém dá o teu valor.
Terra, terra, eu sou teu filho, como as plantas e os animais.
Só ao teu chão eu me entrego com amor firme.
From the beginning, first let's talk about your decision to make guitars and the person that helped you along the way reluctantly.
I originally became interested in making a musical instrument because I went to see Joni Mitchell performing at a folk festival in Toronto called Mariposa, and she's playing a dulcimer. I went to buy one in the store. I was a teenager at the time, and it was too expensive for me. So the fellow at the counter talked me into buying a kit, and I was actually quite reluctant because I was sure I couldn't figure out how to assemble it. Once I put the strings on it and it came to life, the bug bit. It was quite a magical moment. And then I kind of detoured for a few years. I made a few dulcimers, quite a few actually, but I went to a couple of art colleges, and it was there I decided that I really needed to focus my life, and I kind of added up the things I was interested in, art, music, constructing things, and guitar making sort of emerged as this really kind of cool idea. So I hunted for a teacher, and there was one in Toronto, a guy called Jean-Claude Larivet, who I approached, but he didn't want to take on any apprentices, and he especially didn't want to take on a woman at the time, 1974. So I basically bugged him until he hired me, and it was actually his wife kind of making fun of him for not hiring me because I was a woman, which is what actually encouraged me to keep bugging him till he did, and the rest is history.
I understand he actually said that he was a male chauvinist, and his wife was laughing in the background.
Yeah, that was actually what happened. He said, "I'm a male chauvinist." I thought, "Oh, I'm in trouble." Until I heard his wife laughing in the background, I thought, well, it can't be that bad. And I said in those great feminist words in 1974, "I don't care if you don't care." So at the time it was appropriate. And so he put me on a trial, and he was actually a really cool guy, and he really stood up for me, and he was a really cool guy. So I'm actually quite grateful that his wife laughed at him, and we're still friends to this day, actually.
What did he teach you that put you more in the direction?
He actually had a shop with a few employees, and we just made guitars all the time. Like, we made 6 guitars each week, and I got to watch every aspect of how to make a guitar. So over the course of 3.5 years of apprenticing with him, I went from sweeping the floors and running for coffee to being his senior apprentice and doing the kind of the most complicated tasks under his supervision. And we made about 1,500 guitars over the course of that time. So I got to see, you know, every aspect. And then I stayed with him for the 3.5 years. Then I set out on my own. And then after I studied with Jean-Claude Laird, I actually had this incredible opportunity to go visit James DeCristo in Long Island. And I met him, and I asked if I could work with him and study with him. And he said yes. So I actually learned archtop guitar building from him. So I used to travel down to where he was at the time, Greenport, Long Island, in 1982-84. I was working with him.
Wow. Had you been in New York before that?
Only as a student from an art college. I went on a kind of a week trip, you know, on a bus with a bunch of artists and wandered around New York in 1974.
Okay. So when you were here in Long Island, what was that experience like being there?
Well, really, I just spent all the time in the shop working. But working with Jimmy was incredible because he studied with Don DeAngelico, and they're kind of the two cornerstone archtop guitar builders in American history.
Huh.
And I didn't quite understand the awesomeness of what I'd walked into until I was there for a while, and I started hearing his stories, and people would come in, and I was meeting these sort of benchmark jazz players of that era, and it was kind of walking into a really incredible part of American guitar history to be able to study with him. And I worked on John DeAngelico's workbench using his hand planes, and that's what I was using to build my first archtop. So my impression of Long Island really was just Jimmy's shop. I didn't really do much other than work.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hi, Linda.
Hey. Hi. Is that better?
Oh, so much better.
It's actually a 1930s Bakelite wall phone.
Oh, you're serious?
I am serious.
Oh, my goodness.
I could knock myself out answering the phone just by putting it to my head. It's got a rotary.
No.
Oh, yeah. In fact, you want me to dial something just so you can hear what it sounds like?
Sure.
Okay, I'm going to dial a 4. Can you
hear
that?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Wait, you can still make calls even though it's rotary?
Yes, I can.
Oh, my goodness.
For some reason, it works. I don't understand why, but it's a great thing when the power goes out because my phone works.
Right? Exactly. Oh, my goodness. Okay, then. Thanks for that.
Okay. I wanted to give you the image so your listeners can, and also if I knock myself out in the middle of a phone call, you'll know why, because I hit myself with this 400-pound headset.
So we were talking about the jazz guitarist that came through Long Island.
I can't remember offhand any of the names, but
okay.
It would have been, you know, the sort of the old school, all the guys who, you know, that sort of school of jazz players in New York who would have been buying the John DeAngelico, DeQuisto era guitars.
Was Jim Hall one of them?
No, but he was a client at the time of Jimmy's. I know, for instance, Gary Larson, the cartoonist, was one of his clients. After that, he also bought a guitar from me. But it was just this entrance into this wonderful old world of guitar making. I stepped into the history, a time machine, really, walking into his shop. It's so rich and full of incredible history.
Curious about the woods. Apparently there are different types of woods for different situations, different parts of the guitar. Could you share a sort of breakdown of what is used and why it's used?
Sure. Archtop and flat top guitars are quite different instruments, so they have slightly different woods. But the basic premise for a guitar is that you usually have the back and the sides are a harder wood. and they're reflective, and the top is a softer wood, so it's more flexible.
Okay.
And what you're doing with the string is you're basically exciting the top so it moves, and it pumps air. So if you've got, depending on what type of wood is on the top, you'll get a different sound. So usually you use spruce for the top or a cedar on a flat top sometimes. And on the back and sides of an arch top, you use usually curly maple and often European curly maple, but you can use domestic hardwoods as well. And then on a flat top guitar, traditionally you've used Indian rosewoods or some type of rosewood. And again, it's the top is moving and the back and sides are really acting primarily as a reflective plate, kind of like a drum head if you envision it, you know, when you hit it and it moves, that's where you get the sound from. And the back and the sides are meant really to project the sound forward. That's a really simplistic view of it because there's subtleties where you actually tune the back and sides a little bit so that they actually start moving as well. But as a basic understanding, that's the simplest way to explain it.
For an even more basic understanding, what is the difference between a flat top and an arch top?
Okay, that's a good question. Flat top guitar has a sound hole, so it's a circle in the center of it, and the top is actually flat. It actually isn't flat. It's got a slight arch on it, but it's the kind of guitar you would see somebody like Eric Clapton plays a flat-top guitar, or Willie Nelson, Blake Shelton. Those would all be flat-top guitars. A jazz player, the arch-top guitar looks more like a cello or a violin, where it's got those what's called F-holes, and the top is actually quite arched, and there's the physics or the mechanics of how the top moves is quite different. And originally, arch-top guitars were designed to be loud, to cut through the horn section of a big band. You'd see people furiously sort of strumming away in the background, going chunk, 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 and
right.
You hear this percussive kind of loud chord thing happening that would cut through all the other big band instruments. But over time, the arch top has evolved to become a more subtle, actually beautiful instrument, I think, a much more interesting sounding instrument. Originally, it had a really loud attack, and then it died out quickly, and now more modern arch tops have a bit more sustain. So the difference acoustically between a flat top and an arch top is arch tops have more power, but it dissipates quickly, and usually a little less sustain than a flat top. But they're kind of, because of the way people are building, specifically the way I'm trying to build them, is they've got more sustain, but they keep that kind of magical reverb sound that an archtop guitar has, kind of like hollow. It's like you're playing it in a canyon or something, where it's got this sort of slight echo to it. Again, this is really simplistic. For anybody
sure.
who kind of knows guitars out there, they're probably saying, yeah, but there's all variations on that.
Right. Oh, yeah, but we're getting the 101 here.
Okay. I'm
extremely basic 101. Thank you so
okay.
much for that. When did you decide to come out on your own and make your own guitars?
Well, 1974, I started with Larrivee, and about 1978, it was time for the baby bird to leave the nest, and I opened up my own shop, and then that's when my real, a whole different education happened of how to make a living, or attempting to make a living as a guitar maker. And I had a shop I shared, actually, with another instrument builder who was a lute maker. So I went from a very luxurious, fully powered modern shop to a very simplistic shop above a pool hall in Toronto with a lot of hand tools. And so it was a completely different education, plus trying to make a living, which I didn't have to do until I went out on my own. I mean, I got paid by Larrivee, but it was kind of like, in those days, becoming a guitar maker was like signing an oath of poverty. You did it because you loved it.
Wow. Well, I've seen you have a long list of people that you've made guitars for, but I guess the most popular is Pat Metheny, and I understand that he actually was a name that helped put you on the map.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar and My Bowl's the name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones, and our guest for this evening is luthier or guitar maker Linda Manzer. What you're listening to in the background is Travels from Pat Metheny's 2000 Warner Brothers Records release, Trio 9900, 1999-2000, live release. That's Pat Metheny on a 12-string fretless guitar made by Linda Manzer. All of the acoustic guitars that you'll be hearing this evening are made by Linda Manzer. Larry Grenadier on acoustic bass and Bill Stewart on drums. Before that, we heard Counting Texas from the Pat Metheny Trio. Live is the release. This is a 2000 Warner Brothers Records recording. Pat Metheny on 12-string fretless guitar, Larry Grenadier on acoustic bass, and Bill Stewart on drums. Before that, we heard Lonely Woman from Pat Metheny with Charlie Hayden and Billy Higgins from Rejoicing, the 1984 ECM Records release. Pat Metheny on Picasso 42-string guitar, Charlie Hayden on acoustic bass, and Billy Higgins on drums. Before that, we heard Into the Dream from Jim Hall and Pat Metheny, the release, Jim Hall and Pat Metheny, the 1999 Telok Records release. Jim Hall on electric guitar and Pat Metheny on this selection, the Picasso 42-string guitar. Before that, we heard Mob Job from Pat Metheny and Ornette Coleman. Song X is the name of that release. This was originally recorded in 1986. This is from a 2005 Nonesuch Records reissue. Ornette Coleman on alto saxophone, Pat Metheny on guitar and synth guitar, Jack DeJeanette on drums, and Nardo Coleman on drums as well. Before that, we heard Estrelada from Milton Nascimento. Angelis is the name of that release, in 1994 Warner Brothers Records release. Milton Nascimento is playing a Linda Manzer acoustic guitar. Before that, we heard A Story Within a Story from the Pat Metheny Group. Imaginary Day is the name of that release. It was released in 1997, Warner Brothers Records. Before that, we opened the program with Strunz Ahmed from Amiri Baraka, David Murray, Steve McCall, and that's from New Music, New Poetry, a 1982 India Navigation Records release. Amiri Baraka on voice poetry, David Murray, tenor saxophone, bass clarinet on others, Steve McCall on drums, and we're going to bookend the end of our program with another piece from Amiri Baraka called Against Bourgeois Art. Stay tuned for our On the Bandstand segment with our associate producer Hank Williams and more from Linda Manzer and Sugar in My Bowl right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl continues.
Good evening, jazz fans. This is Hank Williams, and welcome to On the Bandstand for April 29th. This segment features aerial listings of Sugar and My Bowl guests so you can see them live. And this week's guest is guitar maker Linda Manzer. And we have lots more listings for you this week. We start with drummer Andrew Surreal, who's at The Stone on May 1st. Blues vocalist Alexis P. Suter is at Iridium on the 2nd, and at Piermont's Turning Point Cafe on the 4th. Guitarist Mary Halverson is at The Stone on May 3rd. Bassist Dave Holland is at Jazz at Lincoln Center's Rose Theater with Zakir Hussein on the 4th. Harpist Brandy Younger is at Brooklyn's Lafayette Avenue Presbyterian Church on the 5th, and that's part of the annual Central Brooklyn Jazz Festival. Looking a little further ahead, bassist Ron Carter is at the Blue Note from the 7th through the 9th, and the 14th through the 16th. Percussionist Adam Rudolph has a residency at the Stone from May 8th through 12th, and he'll be joined by drummer Hamid Drake and guitarist Nels Klein on various nights. blues guitarist James Blood Ulmer is at City Winery on the 10th. Trumpeter Ahmed Abdullah leads the Diaspora Ensemble at Sister's Place on the 10th. Guitarist Julian Lage is at Les Poissons Rouges on the 12th. Vocalist Lisa Fisher leads Grand Baton at the Blue Note from the 10th through the 13th. Pianist Vijay Iyer is at the Village Vanguard from the 15th through the 20th. Finally, on the radar is the 23rd Annual Vision Festival, which blows back into Roulette in downtown Brooklyn from the 23rd through the 29th and kicks off with a film festival on the 21st at Anthology Film Archives in Manhattan. We'll have more details in the next Bandstand, we'll throw a preview up online, and we'll have the full schedule linked on our blog. That's all for this week. If you missed anything, full listings are on our blog. Go to sugarinmybowl.org and click the link for the blog, where you'll also find reviews, features, and jazz news. And sugar is spelled S-U-G-A. Playlists and audio from this and previous shows are also on the website. And if you're on Twitter and Facebook, look for us there too, where we'd appreciate likes, tweets, and shares with your friends. If you really like what we do, please help the station stay on the air by pledging whatever you can and consider becoming a WBAI buddy with a monthly pledge. The Support WBAI link on the Sugar in My Bowl website has details, and we're grateful for any help you can give the station. This is Hank Williams signing off. With our biweekly schedule, we're off the air next week, but we'll have updated event listings online and are scheduled to be back on air on Sunday, May 13th. Either way you connect, we'll see you next time on the Bandstand.
Hi, this is Bobby Humphrey. You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
I met him at a show, and I actually approached him and hoped he'd be interested in trying one of my guitars. He did, and he ordered one, and then I saw him a few months later, and he ordered a second one and offered to endorse me, which what he was, I think, was looking for was somebody that could turn his musical ideas into instruments, and I was game. I mean, I was a huge fan of his before I met him, and I was very eager, young, and willing to try all sorts of experiments and go wherever he wanted to go with musical instruments. So it ended up being like an amazing opportunity for me, but like he's an amazing guy. As a musician, I'm a huge fan of his, but as a person, I'm an even bigger fan because he was so gracious in keeping an open mind about working with me and giving me ideas and then running with whatever I handed back to him, you know, my interpretation of his idea, and he would just run with it. It was a really fantastic experience. I made over 25 instruments for him.
Oh, wow.
And most of them were original designs that he and I came up with.
Nice. And I understand that some of those ideas from Pat were also, in a good way, challenging for you.
Yeah. Yes, they were. You know, I would say, sure, I can do that. And then I'd walk out of the room and go, uh-oh, what have I just committed to? How do I do that? You know, that's why I say he was so open-minded, because sometimes I would get close to what he was thinking, but he would just adapt, because for him, I think it was a trigger for just looking at music differently. So in his hands, it would inspire a different musical interpretation of what he was looking for. Mm-hmm. We had really good chemistry and good understanding of each other, and I think we really enjoyed working with each other all these years. I mean, like I said, I'm a huge fan of him
right.
as a person.
And of course, during this broadcast, we're primarily going to be playing a lot of Pat Metheny's music, and I understand that your guitars can be heard, which I thought was really nice. On your website, you actually have a Pat Metheny page where you list some of the recordings where you could hear your guitars, which is really nice.
Yeah, in fact, I should update that.
Yeah.
Because it's probably about 5 years old. Yeah. I mean, the main one is Beyond the Missouri Skies.
Yes, with Charlie Hayden.
That's kind of, as Pat says, it's like the ultimate Manzer guitar demo disc. Thank you, Pat. That's pretty much all my guitars on that CD.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
My introduction to his playing your guitars was actually from his What's It All About release.
Oh, so, yeah, the baritone.
Yes. Now, I think he also played the Picasso on that one?
Yeah, I think he played Paul Simon's Sound of Silence.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
An incredible interpretation of that song.
So tell us about the Picasso, the 42 string.
Sure. In 1984, Pat asked me to make a guitar with as many strings as possible. That was pretty much all he said. And in those days, this is, again, before the internet, mm-hmm. believe it or not, and I think fax machines existed. But
right.
So what I would do is make a two-dimensional life-size thing out of cardboard
wow.
with all the necks and everything, and I'd fold it all up, put it in a box, and send it to him. And then he'd write me back and say what he liked and what worked and what didn't work. And so it took about 5 months of design, and I ended up coming up with a 42-string, two sound holes, one, two, three, four neck sections, 42 strings, and it had actually a hexaphonic synclavier electronic hookup, which was actually the first time that had been done on an acoustic guitar.
Wow.
And it also was wedged, which is something I designed specifically for that guitar. So it's skinnier under your arm and fatter on the knee.
Mm.
So the top leans back a bit. So he would have a bit of an aerial view of all the strings crisscrossing.
Oh.
And that ended up being a feature I started doing on all my guitars called the Manzer Wedge. So
yes.
Quite comfortable. And that was the first time I did that. And that was actually an invention I came up with brainstorming with another guitar maker called Tony Duggan-Smith. And he and I were trying to figure out how Pat could comfortably sit with this awkward guitar and see what he was doing. And
right.
this idea came out of that. And yeah.
Wow.
And it's got a couple of doors so you can access it. So you could actually take the two doors off and reach inside and shake hands with yourself.
I'm sorry, what is that, doors?
They're doors. So they're like basically little square holes in the side with covers over them, and
oh, wow.
you can reach inside and work on the guitar.
Oh.
It was an idea you'd have access once the whole guitar is all strung up.
Uh-huh. Wow. That's amazing.
There is a lot of things going on with that.
Yes.
It was pretty out there. It took me about 9 months to build the whole thing.
Mm.
And it went from even weirder to I reeled myself in a little bit and ended up with this thing that I got kind of used to it. And when I first showed it to people, I guess I kind of knew from their reaction that this guitar was going to be a big part of my life for a long time because of the kind of strong reaction people had to it.
Like what were some of the reactions?
It's just a pretty unusual thing. A lot of people thought it was Photoshopped when they saw the picture of it.
Right.
People have said I was crazy. People said I was a genius. Mm. They're all the range from good to bad.
Right.
So I'm kind of immune to comments about it at this point. But,
wow.
but it, you know, the whole thing was just to make as many musical palettes as possible. So Pat had as much variety as possible musically so he could kind of go wherever he wanted to with it. And it also fits on a stand so he can stand up hands-free and just play it.
Oh, wow. Well, I've not seen him do that yet.
Yeah, I don't think he's done it very much, but there is an apparatus we designed so he can if he wants to.
Okay.
Yeah.
this particular guitar has the name of Picasso. But you were actually part of an art project with some other guitarists. What is it, seven guitars?
The Group of Seven Guitar Project.
Yes. Could you explain that and let us know whether that just disappeared in 2017? Or...
Okay. In Canada, there's this group of painters called the Group of Seven Artists. If you tried to think of art before the 1900s, in Canada, or the early 1900s, it'd be hard to kind of get a vision of what Canadian painting might have looked like. For about the 1920s, this group of seven painters got together, and they're based in the Toronto area, but they went out into the wilderness and painted the wilds of Canada. And they were much loved in Canada, but they're not that well known outside of Canada. So I was looking at their work thinking, wow, that's so nice how they all communicated and they got along and they worked together, but they went out and did their own thing and each one had a distinctive style, but there was a commonality about their style. And then it occurred to me that when I worked with Larrivé, there were seven of us, including Larrivé, and I thought, wouldn't it be great if the seven of us, each one of us made one guitar that was a tribute to each one of the group of seven painters. So I approached all the original apprentices of Larrivé, and each one of them said, yeah, I'm totally on board for this idea. So I approached a gallery just north of Toronto that was quite famous for housing group of seven painters. And after took a couple of years of working with them and figuring it all out, but they basically commissioned us to build these seven guitars. And the show launched in May of 2017. And it was in their gallery with a documentary film accompanying it of us making the guitars. It was a huge success for the gallery. In fact, it was so successful that their attendance and membership went up by 50%. They had people coming from all over the world to see the show. They extended it by 6 months. And it just closed. And in fact, one of the painters, the one I did, was Lauren Harris, who also some of your listeners might know. Steve Martin actually discovered Lauren Harris a few years ago.
Wow.
And had a show in L.A. and Boston of Lauren Harris's work. In fact, when we were working with the gallery, he actually came up and was picking out the paintings from the gallery for that show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we didn't meet him, but we had heard he was there. So these are like really incredible painters, and the show was just a delight because the seven of us got to hang out together after 40 years had passed since we were all apprentices. We're now working together on this project, and I gotta say it was like a big love fest. We really care about each other, and it was a wonderful, heartwarming project, and the gallery owns the seven guitars, plus we made an eighth guitar to honor one of the painters who actually died before the group formed, and his name was Tom Thompson, and he was very beloved, and he died mysteriously. His canoe was found overturned in Algonquin Park, and his body was found floating a couple of days later in 1917. And he was considered one of Canada's greatest painters, and he died young, and his death was always a mystery. So the seven of us collectively made one to honor Tom Thompson.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, so there are eight guitars. And we're hoping the show travels. We've got a nibble of the show going to London, England, and I would love for it to come to New York.
Yeah, it would be nice if it came to New York.
I think that's a fabulous idea.
Who needs to know that this should come to New York? Who in New York needs to know?
The Met.
Okay, that's what I was thinking, too.
I think they're musical instrument friendly, and I'm going to choose them if they're interested out there.
Okay. The Seven Guitars Project, by the way, or unofficially eight, is there a musical companion to that project?
They made a documentary that was to be shown with the guitars because they were hanging on the wall. But before that happened, we had some of the finest Canadian musicians come in and perform with really good sound equipment. So there's actually a documentary that actually was shown on PBS and across Canada. And I think it's going to be on some kind of documentary thing on the internet. It's called the Group of Seven Guitar Project. We have Bruce Coburn, Jesse Cook, Don Ross, Kevin Bright, Emma Rush, Tony Springer, Mike Francis, and Susie Vinnick. We even had an astronaut playing, Chris Hatfield.
Oh.
Along with the gallery, we also had what were called acoustic conversations where we had the guitar maker and a player of their choice come and perform the guitar. and somebody interview them. So they were all sold out. And
wow.
So it was a performance and a talk, and I got to interview Chris Hadfield.
Oh, okay.
Played John Larrivé's guitar in Outer Space.
Wow.
So I got to ask him questions about what it's like to play a guitar, a weightless guitar in outer space.
Wow.
Like the unintended consequences of this project was these incredible situations I found myself in. And Lauren Harris's grandson came and saw the show. Lauren Harris died in, I think, 1970. So his grandson, I think he's in his 80s, maybe. And he looks like Lauren Harris to me.
Wow.
With those big blue eyes and bushy white hair. And I've got a picture of him with my guitar. And he's smiling. So that means mission accomplished, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, offend the family with my weird interpretation of Lauren Harris's art. So
who played the guitar that you made?
Bruce Coburn.
Okay. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. He actually wrote a song for it called the Mount Lefroy Waltz.
Oh. Yeah. Did he record it?
It's recorded on the documentary. It did not make it into his latest album.
Okay.
And it's kind of like this cold, icy, he was going for cold, brittle, icy sound. So it's a really interesting piece. Find it on the internet a little bit. You can certainly hear snippets of it if you go to the McMichael Art Collection website, or you know, just Google it. It should come up.
Excellent. Speaking of Bruce Coburn, you have a Bruce Coburn page on your website as well. I guess you worked a lot with him.
Yes. Yeah. I've made several guitars for him. And yeah, because he was at one point Toronto-based, so I ended up getting to know him over the years, and we've ended up becoming quite good friends. And I've made probably about 6 instruments for him over the years.
Nice.
Yeah, he is one of the most incredible guitar players in the world, I think. I've actually had the honor. He actually would play in my shop because he liked the acoustics in here.
That makes sense.
I guess because all the wood and
yes.
You know, it's one of his favorite places to practice.
Nice.
Yeah.
us back now. You are listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of the program. We have a few moments left of the program, but I wanted to get this in. What you're listening to right now is Novena from Milton Nascimento, another selection from Angelis, 1994 Warner Brother Records release. Milton Nascimento on voice and acoustic guitar. Special guest on this recording, Pat Metheny, electric guitar, Ron Carter, acoustic bass, and Herbie Hancock on piano. Before that, we heard an excerpt from Bruce Coburn playing Linda Manzer's guitar from the Group of Seven guitar project, and that was taken from YouTube. Before that, we heard another version of After the Rain by Kenny Garrett from his tribute to John Coltrane, Pursuance, the music of John Coltrane. This is a 1996 Warner Brother Records release. Before that, we heard Kenny Garrett, alto saxophone, Rodney Whitaker on bass, Brian Blade on drums, and Pat Metheny on guitar. Before that, we heard Sound of Silence from Pat Metheny's solo guitar release, What's It All About, 2011, Nonesuch Records. Pat Metheny on that selection, 42-string guitar, the Picasso. Before that, we heard Waltz for Ruth for Ruth Cameron Hayden, written by Pat Metheny in tribute to Ruth Cameron Hayden, to whom I'd like to say hello. Charlie Hayden and Pat Metheny from Beyond the Missouri Sky Short Stories, 1997 Verve Records release, Charlie Hayden on acoustic bass and Pat Metheny on acoustic guitar. Before that, we heard Pipeline, also from What's It All About, the 2011 Nonesuch Records release. And Pat Metheny is either on a 12-string guitar or a 42-string guitar. And before that, we heard our On the Bandstand segment with our associate producer, Hank Williams. As mentioned, we're going to end the program with another selection from Amiri Baraka's new music, new poetry release with David Murray and Steve McCall. The name of the selection will be Against Bourgeois Art. La Nueva Alternativa is scheduled to come on after, so stay tuned for more. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web.
Somebody else you worked with, one of my favorites, Milton Nascimento, or he bought a guitar, or you made a guitar for him, or do you remember anything about that? Or?
Oh my gosh, oh yeah. In fact, I'm looking at a picture of him on my wall right now. Oh man, what a beautiful guy he is. He is actually a friend of Pat Metheny, so
yes.
Pat Metheny actually commissioned me to make him a guitar as a surprise.
Oh, wow.
So he gave it to Milton, and then about a year later, Milton ordered a second one, like I guess he wanted a backup. So he has two of my guitars. They're classical guitars with a kind of a sunburst top and an inlay, a drawing on the top of the guitar of, there's this little sketch he does of the mountains in Brazil, I guess, with little trains going over the mountains. So I added that.
Nice.
And I got a chance to meet him a couple of times, and what a lovely guy he is. Kind of a magic person, I think.
Okay.
I think this was mid-80s he got this. He actually came to my shop here in Toronto.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and, you know, it was kind of just wonderful to have him in the shop looking at what I do, and, yeah.
So at this point, you're not just making guitars. You're pretty much innovating things, creating things that has never been done before with a guitar. I read somewhere that you've snuck things in because other people may not want you to do it. You may say, well, this would work, but they might not agree with you. But you've snuck them in, some changes or some innovations.
probably the wedge.
Yes.
Because they don't notice it unless I point it out to them. They just think the guitar is comfortable. Because from the front, it looks normal. So you can kind of trick people. In fact, I did that with Pat. I made it a wedge, and I didn't tell him. Oh, I also made a fan fret for him once, and I didn't tell him, and I wondered if he'd notice. And he just felt like it was really comfortable, and then I pointed out that the scale length from the high strings to the low strings is actually slightly different, and he liked it. He had no trouble adapting to it, because he just picked it up and played it. So,
wow.
Yeah, I guess I do sneak things in once in a while.
So it sounds
expression, it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission.
Oh, I like that one. I've never heard that.
Okay.
From what I'm hearing, though, it sounds like what you do add, it provides comfort while you're playing, because, guitars are going to be playing for a long time, and you make it easier for them to do. It's all for ease of use.
Yeah. For me, the priority of a musical instrument, a guitar, is the first thing is it's got a sound great.
Right.
Second is it's got to feel great, so that it's effortless to play.
Uh-huh.
And the third is what it looks like.
Okay.
So that's kind of my priority list.
Right.
Pat actually had a great statement. I love this about what he likes about my guitars is that he doesn't notice them.
Oh.
There's nothing in between him and his musical idea. The guitar isn't the obstacle in between the two. I like that concept.
That's nice, yeah.
Yeah.
Other persons who have bought your guitars, Julian Lage. I think he has two now.
I think he's got one, I think. Right
now. Yeah, he got it from somebody. He didn't get it from you directly. It was like a secondhand, quote unquote.
Yeah, that was he was 11 when I met him.
Wow.
He was kind of known as a child prodigy.
Right, right.
And I actually met him in California, and I saw him play, and like, wow, blew my socks off that this little kid whose legs didn't even, touch the ground when he was sitting on a stool was playing, and everybody's jaw was dropping. And then he came over, I was at a guitar show, and he came over and he tried this guitar I had that a woman actually had owned, and she had, I think the neck was too, I can't remember, it was too big or too little for her. So I had just taken it to the show as a demonstration guitar, and Julian got really attached to it, and a couple of weeks later, I got a call from him and his dad, and he wanted to buy it. And then about a month later, he called me up and said he was going to be playing on the Grammys, and he did. So you can see him on the playing it.
Wow.
I think it was 2008,
I guess.
If you Google it, you can find a little clip. He just got the guitar, maybe a couple months earlier, and he was this wonderful. And, he's kind of exactly the same, only he's a
taller
now. He's taller, and he's got facial hair, and he's got a slightly deeper voice. But, he was always this very wonderful, spirited person with really wise. His life could have been really different because he was kind of, child prodigy, and he made really good choices and really wise choices, and his family did as well, to guide him to where he is, which is, I think he's one of the best, most creative guitarists on the planet at this point.
I guess it was great to know that Pat Metheny and Julian Lage crossed your path. They're also former guests of this program, so yay.
I'm in good company.
You are in great company.
Yeah, I'm so lucky to be able to have worked with these. I kind of pinch myself and I think of my client list and how I've been able to interact and provide instruments for these incredible musicians. I'm pretty honored. I'm just so lucky. I mean, I've worked hard. I'm not
exactly, gonna
say, but it's also fate put me in the pathway of some of these people at the right moment. So I have no complaints.
When you get new clients, how does that come about? Is it at this point word of mouth? Well, I guess right now, people just say your name, Linda Mazur.
Yeah. I don't know. If I just get an email from somebody and they want me to make something, or they have an idea and it sort of connects, we move forward. I'm making about 10 to 12 guitars a year now.
Oh, okay.
It's not that many. I've made about 600 over my life.
Wow.
Maybe more. I actually haven't counted lately. Just sort of steadily working on stuff, and I never know who's going to be at the other end of the phone or who's sending me an email. I don't really know, other than I get to know them as I'm building the guitar. I'm kind of open to experimental projects, but I'm also really happy just to make a guitar that just works as a tool, and I'm never bored.
Good.
That's for sure.
Now, you actually come from what I understand, you come from not just being around folk music. You were actually going to sing folk music at one point. Sing and play guitar, I guess.
I'm a failed folk singer. my backup plan was Guitar Maker. No.
Right.
No, I was not that good as a folk singer. I was, I was a guitar player. I was kind of a, like a bad copy of Joni Mitchell. Because I kind of look, when I was younger, I look a bit like her. So there was no room for me. There's already, she was my inspiration to start musical instrument making. So I guess that's definitely the path I was supposed to go on. Luckily, my folk career ended quickly and transferred to instrument making, which is when made my heart beat much faster than being a folk singer. So,
well, since you're in Canada, have you met Joni Mitchell yet?
I have met her prior to me being a guitar maker, though.
Oh, okay.
I met her when I was actually a telephone operator.
Oh, wow. that explains why you have that phone in your home.
maybe. I was telephone operator for a short period of time in Toronto, and I ended up meeting her, and I actually spent quite a bit of, an evening with her and some other people. Lovely, amazing woman, a huge inspiration. I met her and Gordon Lightfoot at the same time, actually. I actually went on to make a guitar for Gordon Lightfoot later.
Exactly. So I've read.
Yeah, but that was unrelated to this. This is, I was just happened to be at this little dinner thing with a few people, and I don't know how really I ended up there, but I ended up spending an evening with them, so.
Super.
Quite an amazing accident.
Do you play yourself? Do you play for fun?
I had waves of playing. I played Over the Rainbow to my one-year-old great-nephew yesterday.
Ooh, yay!
On a ukulele.
Oh!
And he didn't cry, so I guess I wasn't that bad.
Yay!
So, but no, I'm definitely a much better guitar maker than a singer-songwriter guitar player at this point.
That's fine. Was there anything that you want to share with WBAI listeners that they may need to know or we didn't touch on about you and your life?
I guess, if you have a dream, follow it, because that's kind of what I did, and it ended up working really well for me. It didn't seem like it was going to at the beginning, but I always knew I'd be happy doing what I did, and in the end, it ended up, I can make a living doing what I'm doing, and I've had an incredible, it seemed like not the best choice as a career at the very beginning, because there wasn't a lot of future in it, and boy, was that wrong. So just follow your dreams and be true to your heart and trust your gut, trust your instincts, and good things can happen. That's my advice.
Well, thank you so much, Linda Manzer.
Thank you so much for your interest in me up here in Canada. I appreciate it.
And just so people can find out more about Linda Manzer, they can go to www.manzer.com. Yes?
With a Z.
Yes, yes, M-A-N-Z-E-R.
Thank you. Wow, I'm going to, this is my movement to change America over to Z.
Thank you, Linda.
Thanks so much, Joyce.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This poem is, I read at poetry festivals, as I said before, because I always encounter this entity and object in these poetry readings. It's called Against Bourgeois Art. War on the horizon. A ship with bloody sail. Andy Young slips on his Chamberlain appeasement get-up. He got from years listening to the CP hype Martin Luther King. Is there somebody out here to record this? The U.S. being thrown out the front door. The Russian bear charging through the back door. My man suddenly clearly an apologist for new style colonialism, telling us we can't fight the U.S. Those centuries of our dead are buried here. Oceans of our blood have fertilized a black nation in the South. Is there someone here to get this down? Can I get a, like they say, witness? An eye that can see through this here. In Jimmy Carter's snake oil show, there is a room nobody talks about. Steel door, fumes seep underneath. Inside, blood and hair on the floor. Bones stacked in the corner. Photos of Goering, Goebbels, Joe McCarthy, and Nixon in the nude. Trying to put helmets on their woods. Will somebody put this stuff out? You walk through a museum, all the colors of the spectrum right there, but not one image except
concept of checks passed. Pollock dollar signs, the Queen fortunes, Larry Rivers pots at the end of the rainbow. No people, no love, no heart and soul, insides falling out. No fighting in the sky, no fires rip the street, no children screaming death, no police, no state, except it is the state, bull on the wall. No people struggle, just color thrown by baby snoop. A down and leaving unintelligent. No record of this place. As wild the mother joint as America is, somebody should get this down, otherwise no one will believe it. Get it down. Get it on the record. Get the hate, the horror, the lies, the Rockefeller monsters eating corpses. Hey, bro, say hey, what it is, dude, yeah. Choo-choo, do it is your wow, wow, doo-doo, baby, baby, baby. Carrying the radio on the show. Eating corpses, coal mines, garment center, assembly line. Hot steam and steel poured through space. Not any of life is there. Hey, poet, you artist. He turns in the shadows, sucking a marble, dribbling Andy Warhol's lost. He is an artist. He is a poet of Po 9 too. His work is about everything. His work is about the universe. Her work is about stars belching. Her work is about gray hair lost in the desert, peeped in a teeny voice. No babies. No screams, no red light, no future. Death peeped in a teeny voice. Stupidity dripped in a selfie voice. Bourgeois poets yodel nonsense about boring absence. They think up funny ways for letters to sit on the page. Concrete bulls, arty dumb. They are safe as old toilet paper. Revolution sweeps the world. Bourgeois artists stare at crumbs of dust in the light. People change reality. But these dull imitation poets talk to us of fragmented nothingness, like two-cell creatures trying to bebop. The world is heavier than they know. They do not know. They fight knowledge with abstraction and think they cool because they talk to themselves. They are full of like vultures pecking on an open grave. They uphold dying capitalism and give themselves air. They think that it's profound and complex. But the people think it's as profound and complex as monkey farts. Now meditate on that.
Hello, bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.